As long as we are proud of who we are and what we are fighting for, there is nothing we cannot achieve. As long as we have confidence in our values, faith in our citizens, and trust in our God, we will never fail. Our families will thrive. Our people will prosper. And our nation will forever be safe and strong and proud and mighty and free. Thank you, and God bless America. Good night.
You have been listening to the President of the United States for more than an hour, speaking to Republicans and Democrats in the U.S. Capitol, as well as to the American people and people all around the world. We've gotten a lesson in a democracy and how an open government operates. Not everyone in the room agrees with the president, nor does everyone listening here in the United States or around the world. He was defending his first year as president. This is the State of the Union. And he is also telling us what his plans are for the future. Catherine Gibson is standing by at Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. Catherine, your thoughts?
Well, you know, what the most important part of the president's plans for the future included is this talk about immigration. And that's the part of the speech that really will stand out here on Capitol Hill in the coming days, because we've really got so much to do in so little time. So when the president had that line, "Americans are dreamers too," I think he was sending a message to Congress that the interests of the American people, their safety when it comes to securing our borders, will be the most important priority when it comes to negotiating that deal in Congress. And I think it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out in coming days, particularly since the president really didn't mention the wall that much, that great southern border wall that came up so much during the election, only got one mention here tonight. Instead, the president really emphasized hiring more border agents and border security. So it'll be interesting to see how Democrats respond to that and how that plays into the fate of the dreamers.
And indeed, we are standing by for the response from Democratic Congressman Joseph Kennedy III. Steve Herman's here with me at headquarters of Voice America and White House Bureau Chief. Your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting that he did also touch on some international issues. There was a very brief mention about China and Russia. But he spent quite a few minutes talking about North Korea and then the family of that young University of Virginia student who came back in a coma and died shortly thereafter when he arrived back in Cincinnati. So to spend that much time on one country tells you just how much of a priority it is regarding the nuclear threat from North Korea.
Jim Malone is here with us. Jim, he certainly has broken the mold of what we traditionally think of a United States president, but tonight he looked like, you know, like what we're accustomed to with presidents speaking. Regardless of the content, he looked like the president of the United States. He wasn't a tweeter tonight.
That's true. In fact, that's what I was struck by most of all was his tone. I thought it was a softer tone from President Trump, something we don't often hear. I thought at times he tried to be almost lyrical, to reach out and try to bring the country together. But we also saw those watching on television visible evidence that's going to be difficult, because many times we saw the Republicans applauding and cheering and the Democrats basically sitting on their hands, especially on the issues that really divide the two parties, things like immigration and some of the other issues we've touched
on. Not to mix metaphors and to talk about inside baseball, but he made the reference to standing for the national anthem. This, of course, coming up is the Super Bowl coming up here in the United States, big football game. But certainly has a taste of patriotism, and certainly was a message to the players.
Well, this was a speech that I would call a flag, faith, and family speech, which very much talks to his base. I'm not sure how well received it's going to be among the approximately two-thirds of the nation that has not supported the president. And again, I see this mainly as reinforcing the base. Mm-hmm. And if they're able to get 1 or 2% jump for a short period of time, then they'll probably declare this a success.
It's an election year in the United States for Congress. They need something for the president to take back home to run on their elections. And he's highlighting the improving economy, where he stands on some of these cultural issues. At times, it did have the feel of a Republican pep rally. with some of the issues he touched on, which were very dear and near and dear to the hearts of a lot of the Republicans.
Well, Leader Nancy Pelosi, of course, is the head of the opposition party, the Democrats. There were a few pool camera shots of her sitting rather stone-faced. We're going to hear a Democratic response very shortly, but she was having none of it.
Yeah, she really was not looking too pleased. We did see the Senate Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer, applauding a few times, perhaps out of politeness. But obviously, that's the display that's going on in the country right now, this sharp divide. Has the president done anything tonight to try to reach across? I think some may give him some credit for trying. I think Republicans will be very pleased with this speech. It bolsters his strong, loyal followers and gives them something to look forward to try to stem what may be a Democratic wave in November.
There's this big immediate fight coming up on immigration reform, and he said something that's a little bit new tonight. There had been this framework released on the Dreamers giving them a path to citizenship where there had been that 10 to 12 year range in there, and we always saw that as negotiation. But tonight he was firm on 12 years if they essentially behave.
And he also made news on Guantanamo Bay, I think.
There was an executive order signed.
He had signed the order.
Yes.
And so they're going to take that view on enemy terrorists captured abroad.
Which, of course, was released during the speech to all of us in the media, is that we found out that he's going to keep Gitmo open. You know, as I watch this, and I mean, I'm so much aware of the fact that, you know, how different it is now, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, I mean, when the rest of the world can actually be part of this with us Americans here, is I wonder what they're thinking about in Iran tonight, in the Persian service watching this, or in North Korea to the extent of what bleeds over into North Korea.
Well, two-thirds of the speech was domestic. If you look at the page count, and as Steve mentioned, you know, there was one mention of Russia, one mention of China in the entire speech. So there was quite a bit of North Korea. It seems as though there's a deliberate amping up there, maybe, in terms of the rhetoric, I think, on that.
What do you expect to hear from the Democratic response in the next, that's going to happen any minute now? It's coming from Massachusetts.
Yes, we know a little bit about what Joe Kennedy III is going to say. He's going to be in Fall River, Massachusetts, actually delivering this response, as he'll point out, a proud American city built by immigrants. And of course, there's going to be a lot of pushback against the immigration reform plan put forward by this administration. And he will also talk about that, yes, there's been partisanship and politics and even chaos this past year, but Joe Kennedy will say it's far bigger than that, that he will claim this administration isn't just targeting the laws that protect us, that they're targeting the very idea that we are all worthy of protection. You
know, people watching this saw that there are a number of special guests there up in the First Lady's box. And we understand that the First Lady hosted a party tonight as a nice gesture to all the guests, because obviously these people came, these Americans with, you know, many sort of personal problems, you know, that were quite painful even to listen to.
I think we saw, too, President Trump as a master showman in those moments.
I don't mean to demean him. I think he felt their agony.
But he masterfully, I think, they were trying to weave in the stories and to make the points about trying to reach out on unity, but also that the nation needs to be strong in the military and some of the other issues that he likes to highlight.
Those were definitely the most emotional moments of the speech, when we saw tearful parents in the audience as the president recounted what their children, what they had been through. A very, very powerful part of this speech.
That's always the most painful part. You know, as we watch and we have a chance to sort of look back to see how so many fellow Americans have suffered over the last year, because that's when they're basically collected incidents over the past year. And, of course, there are many more that we don't hear about.
And it's a reminder, all of this is about real people and real problems. And so we discuss the politics of everything. But in fact, so many issues he touched on do affect so many lives. Look at the opioid epidemic in the United States.
But he didn't get.
Terrible.
But still, no solution.
No.
I mean, he identified problems, and I'm not, and I don't mean to throw him under the bus for this, but he identified problems and very serious ones like the opioid crisis here. But no solutions.
Well, he talked about going after drug dealers and pushers, but a lot of people would say that a lot of responsibility for this opioid problem actually goes on pharmaceutical companies.
What did he mention, pharmaceutical companies? I think that he blamed the distributor.
He did, right.
He didn't name the pharmaceutical company in the whole thing. I thought one thing that was interesting is that he said that experimental medical, we're going to have more, he's going to go to Congress and to try to loosen up experimental medicine. He said that he wanted to give these wonderful Americans the right to try. That's been a controversy here in the United States.
Yeah, it's always a case, too, in the State of the Union. So many interested parties are trying to get their issue before the president and hopefully get it mentioned. And that was clearly one case where they decided to do that.
Should we read anything into it? He says he wants to empower every cabinet secretary the authority to reward good workers. And he also wanted a chance for them to fire the bad workers. And of course, we all sort of wonder, is he talking about something going on here in the United States? Obviously, the investigation. But I think they have the authority to fire people in the investigation anyway.
Well, there was no mention of the Russia probe. We know that. Deliberately.
I don't know that we would expect that in this.
Of the Me Too movement either. Not that you would necessarily expect to hear that. But these are big issues going on. And so this is an hour and a half before the country. It's interesting what came up.
He's speaking to the American people, not just the people in the room. Do you think that he inspired them tonight? Because I think that's part
of the
mission.
Tried, but was
he,
but, at the
but
end.
Do you think he reached out to the American? Was it this unity that we heard that he wanted to do some speech that had something to try to unify the American people who are so deeply divided right now? Did he achieve that?
I think he inspired his base. Perhaps there are those who've been wavering a little bit that were his supporters that might be shored up by this. But this country is so polarized right now. And I think there's a significant percentage of this population, no matter what words that Donald Trump says, they are not going to give him a second
chance. Just from the facial expressions of many of the Democrats, I don't think it was having much effect. Maybe Congressman Kennedy here shortly will shed some light on it.
We're getting word that we're on about 30 seconds before we're going to hear the Democratic response to this. Is this important, this State of the Union?
It can be important, but it's often forgotten. So let's see what the shelf life is on this one.
I think it's less important than it used to be when everybody used to gather around the television set.
I think that he was lucky tonight. He had to reintroduce himself to the American people. And he's been so busy serving these bruising fights with tweets. I think that this was his one chance to at least, I don't know whether he was successful or not, but to sort of reintroduce himself.
But will he go back to tweeting tomorrow is the question.
I think the president has made it quite apparent he does not intend to give up tweeting under any circumstances. And look, I mean, he reaches around the media and he reaches 50 million people without having names. But Joe Kennedy III is giving the Democratic response. He's in the Vocational Technical High School in Fall River, Massachusetts. Let's listen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is an absolute privilege to join you all tonight. We are here in Fall River, Massachusetts, a proud American city. An American city built by immigrants. From textiles to robots, this is a place that knows how to make great things. The students who are with us here this evening in the auto tech program at Diamond Regional Technical School carry on that rich legacy. Like many American hometowns, Fall River has faced its share of storms. But the people here are tough. They fight for each other. They pull for their city. It is a fitting place to gather as our nation reflects on the state of our union. This is a difficult task. Many have spent the last year anxious, angry, afraid. We all feel the fractured fault lines across our country. We hear the voices of Americans who are forgotten and feel forsaken. We see an economy that makes stocks soar, investor portfolios bulge, and corporate profits climb, but fails to give workers their fair share of the reward. A government that struggles to keep itself open. Russia, knee-deep in our democracy, an all-out war on environmental protection, a Justice Department rolling back civil rights by the day. Hatred and supremacy proudly marching in our streets. Bullets tearing through our classrooms, concerts, and congregations, targeting our safest sacred places. And this nagging, sinking feeling, no matter your political beliefs, that this is not right. This is not who we are. Folks, it would be easy to dismiss this past year as chaos, partisanship, as politics. But it's far, far bigger than that. This administration isn't just targeting the laws that protect us. They're targeting the very idea that we are all worthy of protection. For them, dignity isn't something you're born with, but something you measure by your net worth, your celebrity, your headlines, your crowd size, not to mention the gender of your spouse, the country of your birth, the color of your skin, the God of your prayers. Their record is a rebuke to our highest American ideal, the belief that we are all worthy, that we are all equal, that we all count. In the eyes of our law and our leaders, our God and our government, that is the American promise. Today, ladies and gentlemen, today, that promise is being broken by an administration that callously appraises our worthiness and decides who makes the cut and who can be bargained away. They're turning American life into a zero-sum game where for one to win, another must lose, where we can guarantee America's safety if we slash our safety net, where we can extend healthcare in Mississippi if we gut it in Massachusetts. We can cut taxes for corporations today if we raise them on families tomorrow. Where we can take care of sick kids if we sacrifice dreamers. We are bombarded with one false choice after another. Coal miners or single moms? Rural communities or inner cities? The coast or the heartland? As if the mechanic in Pittsburgh, a teacher in Tulsa, and a daycare worker in Birmingham are bitter rivals, rather than mutual casualties of a system forcefully rigged towards those at the top. As if the parent who lies awake, terrified that their transgender son or daughter will be beaten and bullied at school, is any more or less legitimate than a parent whose heart is shattered by a daughter in the grips of an opioid addiction. So here is the answer the Democrats offer tonight. We choose both. We fight for both, because the greatest, strongest, richest nation in the world should not have to leave anyone behind. We choose a better deal for all who call our country home. We choose a living wage and the paid leave and affordable child care your family needs to survive. We choose pensions that are solvent, trade pacts that are fair, roads and bridges that won't rust away, a good education that you can afford. We choose a healthcare system that offers you mercy, whether you suffer from cancer or depression or addiction. We choose an economy strong enough to boast record stock prices and brave enough to admit that top CEOs making 300 times their average worker is not right. We choose Fall River. We choose the thousands of American communities whose roads aren't paved with power or privilege, but with an honest effort, with good faith, and the resolve to build something better for your kids. That is our story. It began the day our founding fathers and mothers set sail for a new world, fleeing oppression and intolerance. It continued with every word of our independence, the audacity to declare that all men are created equal, an imperfect promise for a nation struggling to become a more perfect union. It grew with every suffragette step, every freedom rider's voice, and with every weary soul we welcomed to our shores. And to all the dreamers out there watching tonight, let me be absolutely clear. Ustedes son parte de nuestra historia. Vamos a luchar. Vamos a luchar por ustedes. Y no, nos vamos a alejar. You are part of our story. We will fight for you, and we will not walk away. America, we carry that story on our shoulders. You swarmed Washington last year to ensure that no parent has to worry if they can afford to save their child's life. You proudly marched together last weekend, thousands deep, on the streets of Las Vegas and Philadelphia and Nashville. You sat high atop your mom's shoulders and held a sign that read, "Build a wall, and my generation will tear it down." You bravely say, "Me too." You steadfastly say, "Black lives matter." You wade through floodwaters, battle hurricanes, brave wildfires, and mudslides to save a stranger. You battle your own quiet battles every single day. You drag your weary bodies to that extra shift so that your families won't feel the sting of scarcity. You leave loved ones at home to defend our country overseas, patrol our neighborhoods at night. You serve. You rescue. You help. You heal. That, more than any law or leader, debate or disagreement, that is what drives us towards progress. Bullies may land a punch. They may leave a mark. But they have never, not once, in the history of our United States, managed to match the strength and spirit of a people united in defense of their future. Politicians can be cheered for the promises they make. Our country will be judged by the promises we keep. Thank you. That is the measure of our character. That is who we are. Out of many, one. Ladies and gentlemen, have faith. Have faith. The state of our union is hopeful, resilient, and enduring. God bless you. God bless your families. And may God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
And that, of course, is the response to the President of the United States, Donald Trump. That is Joseph Kennedy III, a Democratic congressman from the state of Massachusetts. Jim, your thoughts?
Well, I think they tried to be the counterpoint to President Trump and the last year that we've seen, a focus sort of on the American spirit and people coming together rather than, in the Democratic view, people being sort of driven apart under some of the Trump approaches. Interesting choice. They need younger faces in the Democratic Party, by the way. Their leadership is getting along. So they picked someone who's fresh and new, but also someone from a family who is, of course, historically well-known in the United States. He's the grandson of Robert Kennedy and the grandnephew of former President John F. Kennedy.
And he's actually quite friendly with the Republicans in the House on a social basis. And I mean, he's well-liked by the majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, who speaks highly of him. He's not a divider in that sense.
Well, I wonder if this is the sort of the coming out ball for Joe Kennedy with that famous name. People would assume that anybody with that name can go very far in American politics. Will this raise his profile? As you mentioned, he's been very low key.
But he's been a hard worker. He's not just a name out there. He has actually been a hardworking member of Congress and maintained a low profile while he's doing that.
And as Democrats campaigned for the elections this year, what we heard there was the counterpoint to President Trump, focused on basically anti-Trump views. But what do the Democrats stand for? We heard some thematic ideas there, but not a lot of specifics. So I think the party is still wrestling with this sort of divide that has not been sort of put together since the 2016
right.
divide.
A lot of strategists have said in the Democratic Party, you can't just be anti something. The party has to get out there and demonstrate what it is for.
Which is something I think that they're going to. I guess I'm sort of sympathetic to the thought that is that he had to respond to a speech he didn't hear. And obviously his was scripted, and he read off a prompter just like the President of the United States did.
Right.
And so it was tend to be filled with sort of glorious ideas of unity and resilience and hope. And he really didn't know what specifics he would be responding to. I guess we'll see that
but
in the days to come.
I think it does come out as a counterweight to the immigration package that's being put forward.
Yeah, a sentiment.
Yes. And he avoided the mistake of some other folks in the past who have given responses that have been overshadowed by some gaffe or something like that. So.
And like all these are staged. I mean, he had the audience, he had the car in the background with the hood open, and I mean, I don't begrudge him that at all. I mean, I would do the same thing. But it was obviously choreographed to give a contrast to the Republican Party.
Right. And again, Republicans would say, "What are you unhappy with the way the economy's going?" But if that were fully true, the president's public approval ratings would be a lot higher than they are. So there's something about this president personally, the way he behaves, that a lot of Americans still have trouble with. And that, going back to what the president did tonight, I think that was one area where he was trying to reach across and perhaps change those views.
Which is why he brought up the bully comment at the end. That was obviously a covert jab at the President of the United States.
Certainly. And I think now it's up to the president. As you said, he's not going to stop tweeting. But is he going to tweet something tomorrow or 2 days from now that's going to step on all of what goodwill could be generated from this speech?
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. And a thank you to Catherine Gibson, who was on Capitol Hill as well tonight helping us. We've had Steve Herman, White House Bureau Chief, has been here, as well as VOA Senior National Correspondent Jim Malone. And it has been an exciting night here in Washington, D.C. And thank you very much for joining us.
From what?